When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provide sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Well, good morning and welcome back to another special edition here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. We are going to be continuing to do these special editions as we all are dealing with this major interruption of our lives and of business. And we here at the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has been putting out a lot of information to our business community in concert with the Hunterdon County Office of Economic Development. So I'll give out some more of that information and advice. And again, this doesn't mitigate. I've been doing this several times over our last two shows, which can be found on Hunterdon Chamber Radio's Facebook page. And the podcast links will be up on our website shortly, but I just want to put a kudos out to all of those on the front line that are helping and serving and treating all those that have been impacted directly by the COVID-19 situation. So kudos to Hunterdon Healthcare, all the doctors, the nurses, all of the technicians, all of the staff, all of our first responders and emergency services, law enforcement, again, the Hunterdon County Office of Emergency Management, our local emergency managers, in addition to the Hunterdon County Board of Health, have had a tremendous response to, assisting and helping and aiding our communities. But, we know as part of that recovery, and hopefully once we get through this response phase and the situation starts to come down, business is going to have to continue, and it's such an important part of the recovery of this disaster because the economy is going to be so critical, and especially here in Hunterdon County, our local businesses and our local employers are being tremendously impacted by what's taking place. And we want to, be a resource, again, and continue to provide that information. So to that end, I want to welcome on board both Bill Flahive and John Mueller. They are both of the firm Flahive and Mueller Attorneys at Law, located in the great city in Hunterdon County, Lambertville. So good morning, Bill and John.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Chris.
Yes, thank you so much for taking time to be with us here this morning. And I know you both can't give out, specific legal advice. You can do that for your clients. But we're going to talk about some general information from employers. And I've got to thank you, Bill, and the firm. And, John, you guys have been great partners to the business community and the chamber. Bill, you currently serve on our board, and you have presented many times throughout the years on information for our employers. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And we've gotten questions from the business community, which I've shot down to you. So we'll do our best to, cover those topics and take this conversation where it needs to go. But maybe before we get started, Bill and John, you could share a little bit briefly about your backgrounds, which are both, very extensive.
Sure, Chris. This is Bill. I've been practicing employment law pretty much since I started practicing law about 25 years ago, and started practice here in Lambertville about 20 years ago. And what John and I do is we provide counseling services to small and medium-sized businesses and nonprofits in the area of employment law, and John also does some commercial work. But generally, our goal is to try to help employers follow the law and treat their employees well, because in the end, that's really good business. John actually worked as in-house counsel at a company and sort of brings some real good experience from inside the business suite to the law practice, and maybe, John, you can talk about that a little bit.
Yes, hi. Good morning, everyone. I served as a general counsel to a manufacturing company down in South Jersey, which unfortunately right now has been shuttered as a result of the crisis. Being able to sit inside, in a company and advising them on specific fact-intensive issues as to sick leave and FMLA and those types of things, gives me some perspective on what many people right now in the county are experiencing. So I'm happy to participate in today's call, and hopefully I can provide some information.
Well, I appreciate that very much, both of you, again, taking time, because this is, again, really unprecedented waters for our business community, for everyone, you know, not only here in Hunterdon, but obviously this is a national and global impact that we're going to continue to feel. So, Bill, you know, we've had some very unprecedented executive orders that came out from Governor Murphy relative to the declaration of the state of emergency, and some of those, you know, are still evolving, and others, you know, I guess may still be coming. So maybe we could just talk a little bit about Executive Order 107, which specifically started to impact businesses this weekend when it was issued.
Sure, Chris. Basically, 107 is going to shut all retail businesses with some exceptions. And the exceptions are really what you would, you know, sort of common sense would dictate are the things that need to stay open. Grocery stores, convenience stores, pharmacies, medical supplies, gas stations, banks, and certainly restaurants and food providers for takeout service. So, you know, from what I can tell from here in Lambertville, people are certainly taking it seriously. You know, and some businesses are able to stay open. I can't imagine, you know, businesses as brisk as they wish it was or it typically is. But, you know, most of the other non-essential, what we'll call non-essential businesses pursuant to the order, have had to shutter. And, you know, what's the impact on that business? And from the perspective John and I bring to it, you know, what do you do with those employees? And I think we need to talk about that today in terms of how employment law interacts with what's going on with the crisis. In terms of other companies, service companies, and non-retail, you know, the direction is to accommodate to as many people to work remotely as possible. If you can't do that and people have to come to your shop or to your office, you have to reduce staffs to a minimum. And then the big question is, you know, how do you pay these people? Can you pay these people? And if you can't, what are you going to do from there? So I think we want to explore some of that stuff today.
No, I agree. I mean, that's been one of the primary questions I am hearing here at the chamber as members are reaching out and looking for direction on that, especially as you shared our small, you know, businesses that are being impacted by this and facing, you know, really heart-wrenching decisions about what do they do with their staffs, what do, you know, they do in terms of individual employees and where do they head. So maybe we can kind of segue over into that in terms of what types of leave and government programs typically kind of govern employee absences.
Sure, Chris. There's seven basic types of leave. The first three are employer-provided, and the last four are paid for either by the government or by insurance companies. So the first three are sick leave, you know, pursuant to company policy. The second one is vacation time or PTO, personal time off. And the third is New Jersey paid leave, which is a program that came in place where all employees are entitled to earn 1 hour of sick time for every 30 hours worked. So those are the three that have to be paid by the employer. The four other ones are New Jersey Family Leave Insurance, which provides state money for people that need to care for an ill family member. Disability insurance, where people are either too sick or too injured to work. Workers' compensation, for those people injured or sick on the job. And then there's unemployment insurance, which is, I think, is probably going to be the biggest safety net now, both with the state and now the feds are getting into it a little bit. I think that's going to be where most people, most employees, will receive relief. So in terms of the seven, you know, if a company has an employee sick leave policy and your employee is out sick, certainly work with them and let them take the time that they have earned under your policy. Our suggestion is that you really work with the employee and decide, do they want to use all their sick time now, or that would they be better off using a few sick days and then kicking over to another type of leave, which we'll talk about a little bit. In terms of PTO or vacation time, it's always between the employer and the employee as to how they use that. If they need to use it and it's not really a vacation, it's a stay at home, certainly work with your employee and let them take that if that's what's going to get them through this down period. And then New Jersey paid leave means that employees are entitled to, as we said, 1 hour of time off for every 30 hours worked. I know all our clients follow that. In fact, all of our clients really, you know, have employee, they give leave time before this law even came into effect. But if the companies or employers have not been keeping track of this, they should, and calculate what you think some of your employees or all your employees may be owed and let them use that time and pay them for that time. So it doesn't, you know, it can accumulate to more than 40 hours in a year, but certainly make sure you're following that directive from the state, and this is a good time for people to use it if they need it. The other programs that New Jersey Family Leave Insurance, suppose that you have an employee who is caring for a family member that's ill, maybe they're ill because of the current health crisis, they should apply for state family leave insurance, which is paid through the state.
Okay.
Disability, certainly if they are ill because of the current situation and they cannot work, they should apply for state disability. Workers' comp is a little unusual. I'd imagine we're sadly going to see some workers' comp cases coming out of healthcare facilities or other people that are on the front lines. That's certainly a method that people could receive some compensation if they're unable to work because of something that happened on the job. And then unemployment insurance, which we'll spend some time on later, that's really, as we said, the biggest safety net. So those are the big seven. As you're thinking about your employees, the advice John and I typically give is think about each person individually and try to figure out where they fit into this scheme of seven different types of leave, what you can do to ease their situation the most, and try to work with them to see what's going to work best for them.
No, I think that's great advice, you know, and I think part of that is for the employers to just take a step back and try to process, because that's, I think, one of the hardest things I'm hearing, you know, at the end of the day, what should be my next step? And I think that's sound advice, you know, relative to that. I know there are some other measures that are in place relative to job protection for employees. Did you want to talk a little about that on both the federal side and the state side, Bill?
The Federal Family Medical Leave Act applies to 50 or more companies with 50 or more employees and people. And basically, it's a guarantee that you will hold that person's job for them in most situations for 12 weeks. There's no pay involved, but you should keep the job open either if they're taking leave because they themselves are sick or injured or if they're caring for a family member. New Jersey has a similar law that applies to companies that have more than 30 employees. But that does not apply to a situation where someone is out of work for their own medical condition. So those are sort of job protections. You know, I think a good way to think about the current situation is we would counsel people to be, you know, really careful about permanently terminating somebody during this period because the law is evolving a little bit. The feds are getting involved. So it's going to be a very tough time to permanently separate somebody. I think the best thing companies and employers can do is sort of, if you need to let people go, try to lay them off temporarily, try to ease the burden as much as you can, and then, you know, see where things are in a couple of weeks. Hopefully you can bring all of your employees back.
Sure.
There's a lot of activity happening on the federal level that John's been following closely, and maybe, John, you could talk a little bit about, the federal legislation that has already passed having to do with employees.
Sure, Bill. As most of you have probably known, have been following the news, there's been a lot of activity in Washington, D.C. and with the President Trump's administration to get protections in place to help the employees who are dealing with this crisis. On March 18th, 2020, President Trump did sign the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, and I'll just refer to it going forward here as Families First, so you know what I'm talking about. Now, this thing moved quickly, from first draft to the House and to being enacted was 4 days. So there's a lot of carve-outs in the law for the Department of Labor to come in and give additional guidance and clarification to many of the provisions of the Act, because most of us, as we read it and look at it today, still have a lot of questions. But I'll do what I can to explain some of the parameters that have been set forth. The Family First basically is two major overhauls to the leave programs for employers. There's an amendment to the Family Medical Leave Act to add a new public health emergency leave component. And then there was also an enactment of the emergency paid sick leave for reasons related to coronavirus. These two programs go into effect on April 1st, 2020, and they will continue to run to December 31st, 2020. And it's important to note that it appears that there's no indication either from the Department of Labor or certainly not in the Act itself that says that these new leave provisions are retroactive. So as an employer, you need to understand that on April 1st they begin, and it's not to apply to employees that are currently experiencing leave relating to coronavirus. The one thing I want to leave with you is the situation with the Department of Labor is evolving daily. The DOL website, I want to leave this with you, dol.gov/agencies/WHD, that's Whiskey Hotel Delta, /pandemic, has all the necessary information that's currently available. And it includes fact sheets from the Department of Labor. It includes all the recent posters, the most recent of which was issued yesterday. That then gives you the employee rights posters that you need to place prominently in the workplace. And it also has a very helpful common questions and answers relating to this new legislation. So quickly, I just wanted to give you an overview of what these two new acts have for you as employers.
No, that's excellent.
In general,
I'm sorry, John.
Of the private sector with fewer than 500 employees. A lot of questions have been circulated. Why was this for 500 or less employees? And it seems the best we can tell is that Congress was most concerned about getting protections for the smaller the employees that work either independently or small companies, and that the larger companies would be better able because they have more robust telework situations or they have more robust planning in place to deal with the imminency of this crisis. So, and I'll get to some of these small business exemptions that are being considered a little bit later. Basically what this applies to is that any employee is going to be eligible for up to 2 weeks of full or partially paid sick leave for COVID-19 related reasons. And employees who have been employed for at least 30 days prior to the leave request may be eligible for up to an additional 10 weeks of partially paid extended family leave, family and medical leave, only for the reason of caring for his or her child whose school or place of care is closed due to a COVID-19 related reason. So the way the act has been laid out is it gives six qualifying reasons on why an employee, why they would qualify for the protections of this act. Now, it's an important note, and we've received some of the comments and questions prior to the broadcast, is these protections only apply to those employees who are unable to work or unable to telework. So just because an employee is home teleworking doesn't necessarily mean they are entitled to the leave benefits under the Family First Act. All right. So if you look at the six categories, number one is subject to a federal, state, or local quarantine or isolation order related to COVID.
And John, now, just to clarify, John, that Governor Murphy's order that people should be staying home, that does not apply in that situation, correct?
Yes, I mean, again, we're looking at what we're reading in the plain language of the act, which is what all we have to go with, and just an overarching order that's given by a state or a municipality is not enough to trigger the protections of this act. We look at it as it has to be applied individually. So if if someone is quarantined individually based on the state's guidance, then that would trigger the protections under the Family First Act. So that's category number one. Category number two, has been advised by a healthcare provider to self-quarantine related to COVID-19. So obviously that is advice that the employee has received from a medical treater that says you must self-quarantine. That would trigger someone's eligibility for these paid leave entitlements. The third category is experiencing COVID-19 symptoms and is seeking a medical diagnosis. All right, so those first three, importantly, those are the folks that would be eligible for day one for the 10 days of paid leave entitlements. And those first three categories would entitle those employees up to 100% of their salary, up to $511 daily, and over a period of 2 weeks or five work days, 80 hours, a total of $5,110. So those are the first three categories. And when we talk about the paid sick leave part, we're talking about the first 2 weeks as of day one that's eligible to all employees, regardless of when they begin.
So, John, when we talk about looking at each employee individually, I guess that's why you really have to figure out whether somebody fits in any of those three slots, correct?
Yes, yeah, and I'll talk about documentation, which is going to be a big part of this, at the end. But those first three, those are the three you need to worry about. People are asking, these are the ones as of day one. All employees are eligible for any employer currently that has 500 and less employees in the state of New Jersey.
And, John,
and if
on
they're
that,
able to telework, then that still doesn't apply. These three do not apply, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And, yes. John, I guess just in terms of, for
even
folks.
If someone is told, and again, this is going to be very fact intensive, and it's going to require a lot of, some documentation, but, if a doctor sends someone home with suspected COVID-19 exposure, but they're able to telecommute, then they would not be eligible for these paid leave entitlements.
Hey, John, could I just ask a question real quick?
If they cannot no longer work, either at home or in the workplace, then they would be.
John, if I could just ask a question real quick on the clarity front.
For employers and employees to deal with.
Chris, you had a question?
I do. So I'm not sure if John. I just wanted to clarify both on the federal paid leave and then the Federal Medical Leave Act. Could we just clarify again the employment thresholds in terms of number of employees? And
so
he may not be able to hear.
Chris's question about the number of employees, and basically it's going to apply to everybody that doesn't get an exemption. And John's going to talk a little bit about the exemptions that apply. So, and the reason that you would have to document why you consider your business exempt from this federal legislation. So,
yeah. So again, as this thing was hastily put together, it was just simply stated 500 employees or less. Now the DOL, they put language in there, and the DOL has promised to come out with guidance that what we expect to say that, businesses with fewer than 50 employees may qualify for an exemption, due to exemption from the requirement to provide leave only for, leave due to school closings or child care unavailability. If those leave requirements would jeopardize the viability of the business as a going concern. Now, the DOL states that it will issue exemption criteria in its forthcoming regulations. They've got a public comment period coming up in April, and they're still working all this out. It's anticipated that the DOL will also issue a small business exemption criteria pertaining to paid leave, provided that other qualifying reasons under the Paid Sick Leave Act. So we expect that the similar exemptions that we see in the federal FMLA will also equally apply. But again, it doesn't say, as we sit here today, it doesn't say state those exemptions in the act.
John, you want to talk about the other three categories that are covered then?
Yes. So also there's three other categories. One, category number four is an individual, an employee who's caring for an individual subject to an order described in the very first category. So that is an individual who's received a quarantine or isolation order based on the criteria established by the state. Now, it's important to note, unlike the FMLA, which specifically says family member, this category is an employee's care for an individual. So it can expand beyond what the FMLA considers a family member. So that's something, again, documentation that will have to be communicated and addressed between the employer and the employee. Category number five is an individual, an employee who's caring for his or her child whose school or place of care is closed, or a child care provider is unavailable due to a COVID-19 related reason. That's the only category, by the way, where an employee might be eligible for the full 12 weeks of some amount of pay, and I'll discuss how that's delineated in a second. The last category, number six, I won't even, it's a catch-all carve-out that was written into the statute that would enable the Department of Labor to give additional criteria and guidance for any other substantially similar conditions. If this only applies to COVID-19 illness, if there's other variants or, other types of virus that relate to this, this will enable the Department of Labor to get guidance and expand the coverage of these entitlements. So it's important to note that for only the top three reasons is someone eligible for 100% up to the 511 daily. For qualifying reasons four through six, and the employee is eligible for two-thirds of the salary, or up to $200 daily for a total amount over 2 weeks to not exceed $2,000.
And Chris, just out of curiosity,
sure.
What sort of things are you hearing from chamber member businesses in trying to sort through these things? Are you hearing there's a lot of confusion?
Well, yeah, I think I'm hearing, from folks, one of those questions that actually just came up on our live Facebook feed, and we'll come to that. That's on unemployment relief and how that impacts the employer. But I'm also hearing, again, how will small businesses be reimbursed, at the end of the day when it comes to, taking advantage of.
Can I talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
The question was about reimbursement if money is paid out under these federal paid sick leave and expanded FMLA. How do companies recoup the money they're putting out for this?
Yeah, sure. So, recognizing, the leave entitlements legislation went through quickly. Obviously Congress and, as we can turn on CNN right now, they're still working through the funding for all of these programs. The way they're looking at it right now, the Family First Act provides for a payroll tax credit for covered employees. Just on March 20th, the IRS, Department of Labor, and the Department of Treasury issued a press release on how these tax releases, these tax credits would work. This joint press release indicates that employers who pay this qualifying sick or child care leave will be able to retain an amount of the payroll taxes equal to the amount of the qualifying leave that they paid, rather than deposit those amounts with the U.S. IRS or under the traditional scheme. So the payroll taxes that are available for retention include withheld federal income taxes, the employee share of Social Security and Medicare taxes, and the employer share of Social Security and Medicare taxes with respect to all employees. So, again, notably, though, if there's not sufficient payroll taxes to cover the cost of qualified sick or child care leave, the employers will be able to file a request for an accelerated payment from the IRS, and the IRS has indicated in this press release that it expects to process these requests in 2 weeks or less.
So we're hearing...
Well, two things that people should think about is, number one, be in touch with your accountants if you use accountants on how this would work. And also, if you're using payroll companies, lean on your payroll companies because they will be up to speed on these types of things. If you do your own payroll, it's going to be a little harder. But I do think this is a bit of an evolving situation, and hopefully some clarity will come within the next couple of days or weeks, I would think.
And, Bill, maybe you could pass it on to either you or John. Will the federal government enforce this right away?
John, what do you think about that?
I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time hearing Chris.
Sure. The question that Chris has is whether you think or we think that the federal government's going to start enforcing this right away. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
No, actually, the federal government will not. They specifically said there's going to be a 30-day non-enforcement. That's one thing that the DOL has given guidance on. But that, again, that doesn't mean that a private litigant or someone who feels that they've been aggrieved cannot, retain counsel and hold a company to task. But the DOL itself, recognizing that this is a sea change, is not going to be holding companies to task with enforcing these leave entitlements.
I guess one of the things that really shows the sea change here is typically as employers in New Jersey, you're really worried about state of New Jersey law. New Jersey's a law that's considered very favorable to employees. Some of the requirements on employers, some people deem as sort of onerous. This is the odd situation where the feds jump in and are doing something that seems to go beyond really even what the state would require, and it's the federal government getting involved in some of the minutiae of employer-employee relations to an extent that is unprecedented, at least in my lifetime. So very unusual that way. One of the things to consider is, as with other laws, whatever the more favorable law to the employee is going to be considered the governing law. So, for instance, in minimum wage, the federal minimum wage is lower than New Jersey's, but as employers in New Jersey, we have to pay that higher wage because that's what's more favorable to the employee. So, in terms of federal and state interaction, it's sort of an odd time. It's a good time for people to keep looking at the websites. John pointed out the federal Department of Labor website. The state of New Jersey Department of Labor has an excellent website. They've been doing a great job of posting things, both from the employee side and the employer side. So we would encourage everybody to make use of these good government resources because the state has really done a nice job in getting stuff out on these types of things.
I guess, Bill, as a follow-up to that, because this is, obviously something that is going to be unfolding, and, I think it's going to be the ripple effects, obviously, on the economic impact to business is still just an unknown, and this may move into weeks, if not months, and even maybe beyond that. But at the end of the day, employers right now are, trying to decide on what they do with their employees. And if they have to let employees go, and even if it's on a temporary basis, maybe we talk about that first, what are some of the steps that employers have to take if they're going to put somebody off on a temporary basis?
Sure, Chris. Obviously, a very tough decision. And I know that all our clients, and I'm sure that most of the, all the employers in Hunterdon County have almost a family relationship with their employees. So it's a very difficult thing to do. But companies and businesses have to get to a point where they think about, can the business survive if I keep all these employees on the payroll and keep paying them? And if the decision is that you can't get through, then you're going to have to start thinking about laying people off or reducing their work hours. So if you make that tough decision, you have to lay people off, the procedure is you have to give them what's called a form BC-10. So John's a military guy. John, what would BC be? Bravo Charlie?
There you go.
All right, so John's Marine comes in, Bravo Charlie -10. So if you were to Google or do any sort of online search for New Jersey BC-10 form, the form's going to come up in a PDF format. You're going to fill out the top part of the form with your employer information, including your employer ID number. And then you're going to mark off that it's a temporary separation. And there's a section that asks you when the recall date is going to be. Our advice would typically be to just say to be determined, because unless you know for sure, back up and running next week, which I hope you will be, it's really going to be tough to say. That then informs the employee how they would apply for state unemployment benefits. These are state unemployment benefits that your company has been paying into since their existence that the employee has been contributing to. So it's a pool of money that your employees are entitled to. So whether you have to lay somebody off or whether you have to reduce their hours, employees will be able to apply for and collect in those situations. Now, the federal government getting involved is actually going to be a benefit here because the federal government is on the verge of passing a massive funding bill that's going to provide unemployment benefits from the federal level. Hopefully, it will provide money to the states to run their more effective, more efficient unemployment systems. So, you know, my personal belief is the money's going to be there in those unemployment funds. So if you need to do it, you know, there's going to be money there for your employees to get by and get us through to the other side of this thing. So BC-10 form is what you'd be looking for. You know, I would be very careful in terms of, you know, making that decision individual by individual and try to decide, as we talked about the different types of leave, sometimes the best answer is going to be to lay somebody off. Because if you continue to pay somebody, that's going to disqualify them from some other programs. And I know that all of our listeners and certainly the clients of the firm are looking to do what's best for the employee. So if you have to make that decision, the resources are there. And the state is ramping up, I think, to not only to handle all these claims, but also to fund them.
I guess, Bill, there was a question from one of our listeners, and I think we've covered it, but I'll just ask it. And it had to do with, are there any other impacts to the employer when that employee seeks this unemployment relief? As you mentioned, we've already, as employers, all paid into that pool, but is there any other, you know, things that should be considered from the employer side?
Well, in normal times, Chris, you're going to see an uptick in what they call your employer, I guess, ratio or your employer rating. Okay. So, you know, we all get these notices every year that sets forth sort of a percentage that they're going to withhold from payroll in order to fund the unemployment system. Some bigger employers are paying almost dollar for dollar. Many of the smaller employers are, you know, contributing percentages. So in a typical situation, if your employee needs to use the unemployment compensation system because you've terminated them, that can affect your experience rating. So typically you have to think seriously about, you know, whether it's worth getting rid of this person. And typically the answer is yes, because a lot of times you're terminating somebody because they're not working out or because they did something that violates company policy. In this situation, it's unclear to me, as we see here today, whether use of the system is going to affect experience ratings as much as it has in the past, because the experience ratings are designed to keep these unemployment funds solvent. We should see a massive influx of government money coming in here. Hopefully that will provide some relief to things like your experience rating if your employees need to use the unemployment system. So that is a little sort of a tangential effect there can be from having to lay somebody off, but hopefully the funding's there, so it's going to minimize the impact.
No, thank you. And I guess, Bill, who cannot be let go? I know there are some provisions that are in place to protect
basically
employees.
If somebody's actually suffering from the current virus or has been advised by a doctor that they should not work or ask for leave off because of either they have it or they've been exposed to it, those people you should not terminate. You know, our general advice is try not to terminate anybody permanently if you can avoid it. Try to get through to the other side and then see how you may have to restructure your business. But certainly if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I've got the COVID-19, the response can't be you're fired.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, let them take sick leave. Let them apply for state disability. Try to get them through the other side, and hopefully at the end you'll be able to bring them back.
Well, before we jump in, we've got about another 15 minutes or so left. I just want to let our listeners know, if you just happen to be joining us, this is Chris Phelan with the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, and you're listening to Hunterdon Chamber Radio. We've got on the line here Bill Flahive and John Mueller, both of Flahive Mueller, attorneys at law down in Lambertville, and you know, having a really, I think, informative conversation. There's just so much information out there for employers to kind of consider, no matter what size organization you are, but especially our business community here in Hunterdon County, very appreciative of the advice. And, you know, again, the information, I should say. I know we can't give out legal advice. You can't give out legal advice. I guess I could. I'm not an attorney, but that would get me in trouble. But there you go. You could debar me. So at the end of the day, let's kind of talk in maybe this last segment a little bit, Bill and John, about what, like, kind of open questions should our employers be considering as we, you know, again, move forward in these very unprecedented times. And I was saying this morning, I got a phone call from a local reporter, and I said this yesterday with Jim. This is not something, like, you think about business. Business is always, you're in the race, you know, at the end of the day. Sometimes it's a marathon. Sometimes you're coasting. This is like a triathlon that business is going to have to be prepared for weeks and months to come. But let's think about some of those things that, you know, what open questions should listeners and our employers, you know, be thinking about?
Well, Chris, before we get into that, and you know, I have no doubt that business is going to lead the county and the state and the country out of this thing. I mean, we're going to get through this. Because the business, the people that build these businesses, these small businesses, are, you know, it sounds trite, but it is the backbone of the country. And everybody is trying to do their best to pull through, to help their employees, to keep their business going. So I have no doubt that we're going to come back and we're going to be fine.
I agree.
In terms of open questions, one thing that sometimes comes up is you have to start thinking about health insurance and how does that get paid for. If you're an employer and, you know, typically, most health insurance plans run on a monthly basis. I certainly would hope that people would not, if you have to lay somebody off, not cut them off immediately. Try to get them through to the end of the month. If they're expected to contribute to their health care benefits, you can expect that they should continue to contribute. If they pay for their own benefits and you're not in a position where you can pick that up for them, then that's, you know, that's something that they're going to have to deal with. If you do have to take somebody off your health benefits, there's both federal and state laws on notifications that have to be sent. So these are kind of a little more complicated things, but if things keep going, you know, if we don't bounce back quickly, which I hope we do, but if you have to start thinking about these things, think about what's going to happen with health insurance, how it's going to get paid for. If you use an insurance broker or an insurance company, try to lean on them a little bit for good advice in terms of notices and when things happen. John, other sort of open things that you might think might be things that employers should think about?
I think it's really key right now that employers continue to document all of these things that are occurring. The new law, unfortunately, unlike some of the stuff that we have in place with the FMLA, it doesn't really address whether the employers can request documentation or what documentation employees should provide. And the FMLA, as we all know, has never, ever covered school or school closings or child care issues. So these are things that you need to think about, having employees provide, you know, notices from school websites that the school is closed, or a statement from a caregiver, a babysitter, or a nanny or somebody that can't do these things. These are things that the employer, needs to gather to document the leave. Quarantine or isolation orders, obviously doctor's notes and advice from medical treaters is critical. So those are things that I think really needs that employers really need to focus on. Again, when they go to apply for the tax credit, when that funding becomes available, they need to be able to document the rationale and the reasoning. The general guiding principle is there needs to be a reasonable good faith basis. You don't want to be in a position as an employer of giving this paid sick leave out willy-nilly to every single employee, because that might be cause for question. So that's one thing I would that I'm counseling clients. That's something that really needs to ratchet up as you figure out, you know, what's the various reasons that an employee cannot either work or telework.
Chris, I think another thing to think about, because I'm an optimist, is let's talk about getting back to business in order of rehire.
Right.
This is something you're going to want to start thinking about hopefully sooner rather than later. You know, our suggestion would be have a rationale for who you bring back sooner and who you wait to bring back. If you can't bring everybody back at once, have a reason for bringing somebody back. Maybe you're going to go with last hired, last rehired. Maybe you're going to look at critical positions, come back first. Maybe you're going to think about, I'm going to bring my highest performers back first because they're going to get us ramped up so we can bring in the rest of the crew. But, you know, try to document your reasons when you're bringing people back. Think about, you know, why you decide you're going to bring John Mueller back before you're going to bring, you know, Sam Smith back. And have a reason for doing it. Because at some point down the road, when things are back to normal, you know, you may get asked about why did you bring back so-and-so instead of so-and-so. Hopefully we don't get to that point. But as John and I, you know, being sort of experienced employment lawyers, realize that down the road, it's always better, as John said, to have things documented. Why did you make this decision? What was the rationale you had? What are the objective facts you used to do? And I would suggest as we get back to normal, hopefully soon, you know, think about order of rehire and documenting why you did that.
No, I think that's you know, great advice, and that's something that, you know, again, so many, especially small businesses, small employers, you know, that are part of our business, it's hard to do that sometimes on the documentation. So here's an opportunity to kind of take that step back and utilize the time to, you know, really do that, and some of the stuff that's on the back burner, take that to the front burner. You know, we've covered a tremendous amount of, you know, information today, which we really do thank. Want to remind our listeners that this will be, you know, again, available on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio Facebook page. We'll put some links up. We're going to have the podcast links up shortly as well. So you can definitely come back and listen to and or reference on this. But I guess, you know, in looking towards, you know, the last few minutes here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, want to thank again, you know, Bill Flahive and John Mueller, both of Flahive Mueller attorneys in Lambertville. Let's talk about, you know, what are some of those best advice that we can give businesses today. I'm with you, Bill and John. You know, we've got to be optimistic about this. We've got to keep moving forward. We've had a county here that has seen, like a country has seen, you know, other national impacts, regional impacts, and we've always been resilient, you know, at the end of the day. And I do think in the spirit of free enterprise, you know, we've got incredible entrepreneurs and business owners that are taking creative measures and creative steps and working with their employees and working with the community. We're just going to see more of that over the next several weeks. But what are some things that we can take away as of today from some of the topics we, you know, covered?
John, do you want to drive home your point about documentation and each one being unique?
Yeah, and the one thing is documentation. We're all familiar with the laminated placards that we see next to the coffee maker or water cooler in our workplaces, but realize that in the telework community, the notice that employers, you need to make sure that all your telework folks are equally notified about these, you know, so I would, you know, take the PDF off the DOL website and make sure all those folks are equally informed with the guidance that's out there. And one final note, I know a lot of Hunterdon County has a lot of small business and independent contractors, and I just want independent contractors to know that, you know, there is both on the unemployment side and also in the Family First Act, there is compensation and relief for independent contractors, specifically the CARES Act that was passed. Specifically applies unemployment system assistance to independent contractors. You know, that's something you could use your internet search or Google to find out more about. And independent contractors are covered by the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. So that's something you should be mindful of. And a lot, you know, the Congress recognizes the gig economy. And a lot of people are going out on their own and doing things more now than ever before. So that's something you should look into, and just don't feel that if I don't work for an employer, you know, a brick and mortar employer, then that I'm not that I don't have entitlements and the possibility of being covered under these this legislation.
Yeah,
That's a great point. I mean, I think the system is set up now with the extra money coming in from the feds that if you're in doubt, apply for the benefits. If you're an employee, apply for those benefits, because independent contractors, people working in the gig economy, the recent federal bill, you know, recognizes that people need to be compensated if they're unable to work, even if they don't work for a traditional employer. In terms of best advice or sort of hot tips, Chris, you know, make good faith efforts to help your employees. I know people do that as a matter of course, but if you really try to do your best to keep your employees informed as what's going on, try to make as many joint decisions as you can, as, you know, things like do you want to use your sick leave now? Do you want to try to defer for later and try to get benefits some other way? You know, make a good faith effort to help your employees, because down the road, if you're going to get scrutinized by either the state or the federal government, a lot of times the people looking into these things recognize that you really did your best and you acted in the best, you know, in the best interest of your employee to the extent that you could. You know, if you can keep people working, keep them working. If you can figure out a way to have people telecommute, have them telecommute. If you need to reduce hours instead of letting them go, you know, reduce hours. It's a matter of getting through the next couple of weeks, I hope, and then things will really start looking up. And really keep an eye on what's happening at the federal level. Keep looking at that Federal Department of Labor website. You know, keep involved with the news and see what's happening. The bill, the stimulus bill that's supposed to pour a lot of money into relief efforts is in the House today. So pay attention to what happens to that. See when the president signs it, and try to keep on top of those sort of things. Look to your resources that you have, your accountants, your payroll companies. You know, and if you have an attorney that you use, talk to your attorney and have them try to guide you through some of the more difficult or sticky questions. The Hunterdon County Bar Association has a lot of very good lawyers there. The Chamber of Commerce has a bunch of lawyers that are members. So if you need that expert advice, reach out and try to get some if you can't figure out the nuances of some of these more complicated cases.
No, I think that's a great advice, you know, to those that are listening, that, you know, resources are out there, you know, and the ability to go ahead and tap into those resources. Now's the time to pick up that phone and make the calls. The Bar Association is great. We've got, you know, obviously up on our business directory at HunterdonChamber.org, a complete listing of attorneys and other business professionals. You can go in there and search that by category. I want to emphasize again, and Bill, feel free with you and John to share this with your, you know, clients as well. We've put up a very robust site that's being, you know, updated literally several times a day. So we're trying to cull through information that's coming from our federal connections, our state connections, and then down to the county and local. So just go to HunterdonChamber.org. You'll see the coronavirus business resource page. And if you guys take a look at that and see that there's specific stuff we are not addressing, let us know so we can put that up there. One of those things I'd like to do is get that link from you on the posters and the DOL information, because I think that's great advice in this telecommuting environment now that employers have access to that. So I'll follow up with both of you on that. But take a look at it. We've got a news feed, a business news feed, that's really trying to push that information out. But I do want to, you know, afford you guys the opportunity by all means to just share how folks could get in touch with you, both you, Bill, and John, and maybe you could share again about the firm and share, you know, the best way in terms of connecting with you.
Sure, Chris. We practice in Lambertville. Our practice is really statewide. We do have a lot of local, small, medium-sized businesses and nonprofits that we work with. So you can just Google William Flahive or John Mueller. Look for us here in Lambertville. The phone number here is 609-397-6390. If you look us up online, you can find our email addresses as well. But, you know, there's a lot of good attorneys out there. If you need somebody, as we said, you can talk to us. You can look to the Hunterdon County Bar Association. There's other lawyers that are members of the chamber. Hunterdon is lucky to have a very good, active a competent legal community. So if you do need somebody, look out for somebody through those resources.
Well, I really want to thank both you, Bill, and John, as well, for taking time to share with our business community, again, this great information. And, again, we'll continue to promote this out for those that could not join us this morning. But I want to wish all the best to you, your firm, your colleagues, your staff, and your families as we move forward.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
So, folks, you're listening here to 100 in Chamber Radio, and this has been Chris Phelan, president of the 100 County Chamber of Commerce. We are joined by Bill Flahive, John Mueller of Flahive Mueller Attorneys at Law. And as I said, use the Internet, for some great resources. I just can't emphasize enough, we're getting a lot of phone calls here, which is wonderful at the Chamber. We're doing our best to put people in that right direction. We have a robust website put together by not only the Chamber, but the Office of Economic Development, the 100 County Office of Economic Development. We are updating that, page several times a day. So please check out the news feed, check out the postings that are up there. We're really trying to pull together now information. I know a lot of businesses are reaching out relative to the announcement yesterday with the Small Business Administration and the Relief Act and the funding and the loan process. There are links up there to Skype with a counselor. We're going to continue to try to get as much information. The New Jersey EDA released its announcement on funding and relief for business as well. That information is up on the news feed and the links. We've got some other toolkits out there as well on that site. We work with our state partners at the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce, New Jersey Business and Industry Association. They have great toolkits as well. And another word of advice for the business community is that if you're in a specific need, maybe you want to check out one of the state industry-specific associations, and we can help you find that. But they're also all responding cumulatively and collectively, to what we're facing. But as we said several times during the show, can't agree enough with Bill on his comments relative to, we will come together. We have faced many crises in our country, and none unprecedented like this, today that we are facing, but we will come out on the other side. And we're going to continue here at the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce to provide you information. Some of that other very local information, we're working in partnership with our local business organizations, really trying to promote that out. We've had weekly calls with them and trying to push things forward. We've got a restaurant directory now open to all restaurants. That's up on the Chamber site and on our Facebook as well. We've also got the opening of our job board to businesses to post, and both not only our job board, you can post as an employer, but you can post as an employee. And I really want to stress as well, the state put up in response to the crisis, which is up on our site, a link to the state job board, which is being flooded with opportunities for folks that are displaced and looking for work. Really check out that employment site that the state of New Jersey has put up, and it's very robust, and it's got a lot of information up on there. Also, 100 in Healthcare has activated a hotline. That link is up on our site. You can actually go visit the 100 in Healthcare site as well. But 100 in Healthline has a COVID-19. So if you are dealing with issues, whether it's your family, your colleagues, your staff, folks you know, they have a hotline that's being staffed 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week. You can reach out and talk to a medical professional, and get that information. So I really want to say kudos to 100 in Healthcare and all of the medical practices, all of the doctors, all of the nurses, all of the technicians, everyone that has stepped up on the front lines, all of our first responders throughout our county, all those in law enforcement, our county government, our county leadership. I want to thank the Office of Economic Development. I want to thank the Hunterdon County Office of Emergency Management, the Hunterdon County Health Board. We're going to continue to move forward, and we'll be doing more of these series over the next week. And we'll definitely be in touch. So feel free, again, to reach out to the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Reach out to the Office of Economic Development. Our information is right up on the website. And, again, we want everyone to be safe and let us know if there's there's something that we can do particular for your business, your organization, your nonprofit, and again, be in touch. So be well, and again, thank you for listening here this morning to this special edition of HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.